The leader called on all Iranians to take the issue of unity seriously. He referred to Iran's three branches of power, saying they should close ranks and unite more than ever before. Later in the day, Ayatollah Khamenei met with top clerics in the Holy City.
The streets of the central Iranian city of Qom on Tuesday witnessed a huge turnout of people who had gathered to pay their respect to the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. The last official visit by the leader to that city was 10 years ago.
The holy city of Qom is home to the shrine of Hazrat Masume, the sister of the 8th Shia Imam, or Imam Reza. Today's visit was particularly important because it's the birth anniversary of the Imam, and Qom is regarded as an important city for Shia Islam, with numerous old and new theological schools. Some people had even camped out from the night before in order to have a good spot when Ayatollah Khamenei would deliver his speech.
یه جوری بتونیم زودتر برسیم بهشون نزدیکتر بشیم به اون مقری که میان صحبت کنن.
Although Ayatollah Khamenei was expected to arrive at 8 o'clock in the morning, people from all walks of life had gathered from dawn, where his motorcade was to pass.
از دیروز همه خودمون رو آماده کردیم که امروز نشون بدیم آقا تو هیچ جای ایران غریب نیست.
The excitement of the crowd peaked when the leader's motorcade arrived. The chance to see the leader in person was a memorable one for many. The massive turnout forced the leader's motorcade to move at a very slow pace. It took Ayatollah Khamenei's vehicle five times the regular time it would usually take to reach the holy shrine of Hazrat Masume, where the people were waiting for his speech.
Now, Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez is in Iran on a two-day official visit. This is his ninth visit to the country, as ties between Tehran and Caracas grow stronger. Salman Khujri has more.
This is his ninth visit to Iran since taking office back in 1999. President Chavez arrived in the Iranian capital Tehran on the fourth leg of his tour to Asia, which took him to Belarus, Ukraine and Russia. President Chavez's visit comes only one day after Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki made an official day-long visit to Tehran to boost bilateral ties, making it the first visit by the Iraqi Prime Minister to neighboring countries after the country's parliamentary elections back in March.
During the two-day visit, the two sides will discuss ways to boost bilateral cooperation, particularly in energy sector.
The energy talks also focused on the establishment of a joint oil shipping company, as agreed in a memorandum of understanding the two countries signed last year, the construction of petrochemical units and participation in Iran's South Pars gas field. Over the past 5 years, Iran and Venezuela have signed a number of memoranda of understanding and contracts for joint participation and investments in oil and gas projects.
One of the issues is the launch of a joint oil shipping company, which will be delivering some 500,000 barrels of Venezuela's crude oil to Asian and European markets.
The ministers of two sides also held the sixth Joint Economic Commission to boost bilateral and industrial cooperation. President Hugo Chavez also met with Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, Saeed Jalili.
Iran-Venezuela ties are strategic and expanding because both countries are fighting the same battle against imperialism and they have common stances.
According to analysts, the recent visits to Tehran by Hugo Chavez and al-Maliki and the recent visit to Lebanon by President Ahmadinejad, which was widely welcomed by the Lebanese people, show that despite the UN sanctions, Iran's influence is increasing on a daily basis across the region.
Economic transactions between Iran and Venezuela now stands at $3 billion, which is rising. This trip and other trips made by heads of states in order to boost bilateral ties show that the sanctions have failed.
Having formed a common front against the U.S. policies, leaders of Tehran and Caracas believe that regular exchange of visits between the two sides can forge further unity. Saman Kujuri, Press TV, Tehran.
In other news, Israeli soldiers have conducted ground incursions into the Gaza Strip for the second time in a day. Israeli troops, backed by a number of tanks, entered southern Gaza late on Tuesday. The invading troops have been confronted by resistance fighters. Earlier in the day, Israeli troops invaded eastern Jabalia refugee camp in northern Gaza. Let's discuss this one a little bit furthermore with Mr. Ralph Schoenemann. He is the author of Hidden History of Zionism. He's joining us on the phone from Berkeley. Many thanks, Mr. Schoenemann, again for joining our broadcast. Israel continues to attack Gaza as its warplanes and drones continue to violate the Lebanese airspace, both clear violations of UN resolutions. Yet we do not hear any complaint, if anything, from the West or even world bodies. Is Israel exempt from international law, would you say?
Well, I think we have to understand that the United Nations is composed of countries that basically have the same class structure as exists in the United States itself. For the most part, the United Nations members are sub-imperial powers. That is to say, they are capitalist states that are subordinate to U.S. imperialism overwhelmingly, and they are subsidized by U.S. imperialism and armed by it. So therefore, the votes that occur within the framework of the United Nations are not votes of the nations in question, but of the country-selling regimes that preside over these subject nations. There's no way to look at the world configuration and to examine a regime like that of Mubarak in Egypt or the Saudi monarchy or the Jordanian monarchy or any of the European subcapitalist states and to think that these are nations casting votes that are reflecting the moral imperatives of the day or are going to respond to naked aggression on the part of the Zionist state against the peoples of Gaza and Lebanon. After all, it is the United Nations that created the Zionist state through the collaboration of Stalin and Truman at the time. And I just want to remind our listeners that at the time that the Special Committee of the United Nations was meeting for the purpose of basically carving up Palestine over the heads of the Palestinian people, the Zionists presented the map, and Rabbi Fishman, representing the Zionist movement, appearing before the Special United Nations Committee of Inquiry on July 9th, 1947, presented a map of what constituted what was called Eretz Israel, the land of Israel. And that map was based upon the diaries of Theodor Herzl, the volume 2, page 711. The map that was presented formally on behalf of the Zionist movement as to what constituted the land of Israel, all of Palestine, all of Lebanon, all of Transjordan, one-third of Arabia, one-third of Iraq, two-thirds of Syria, Egypt up to the Nile, including Cairo, and by the Zionist movement,
sure,
as regards the entire region, that it was their domain.
Right.
And in fact, Ben-Gurion in 1936 and repeatedly declared the intention to absorb Lebanon.
Right. Mr. Schoenemann, I'm sorry to jump in there.
Became the primary objective of the Zionist
sure.
state.
Mr. Schoenemann.
Lebanon was proposed in 1919, planned in 1936, launched in 1954,
right.
Basically realized
Mr.
in 1982.
Mr. Schoenemann, if you allow me.
That's the reality.
Mr. Schoenemann.
Of operations
Mr. Schoenemann, I'm sorry to jump in there.
Mr.
Schoenemann, it seems, I'm sorry to jump in there, it seems that, like Israel has stepped up its military activities concurrent with the U.S. sponsored efforts to revive Middle East talks. What signal would you say Tel Aviv is trying to send, very briefly, in about 30 seconds, please?
Yes, in a brief measure, the so-called talks are a diplomatic feint. That is to say, they are a charade designed to ensnare these corrupt Arab regimes in a process that provides cover for long-standing plans of Israeli and U.S. aggression in the region. The ultimate target is Iran, have no doubt about it. But in the process, they intend to attempt once more to eat Lebanon up to the litani and to create a new dissolution of popular presence in Gaza.
Sure.
The continuing process of targeting the peoples of the region and, above all, removing the Palestinian people from their land and from history, those are the underlying politics. The so-called pacification talks are a charade designed to provide cover for that wicked enterprise.
Okay, many thanks, Mr. Ralph Shahnman, author of Hidden History of Zionism from Berkeley.
Moving on with the news now. French unions say as many as 3.5 million people have taken part in nationwide protests against the latest pension reforms proposed by President Nicolas Sarkozy.
More protests and riots in the streets of France. Police and students again clashed outside schools in deprived suburbs. Elsewhere, youngsters pelted the police and set fire to garbage sacks. More than 1,100 arrests have been made in the last week. President Sarkozy warned against further disturbances and insisted he would press ahead with plans to raise the retirement age.
Il faut faire très attention.
We have to pay attention to a certain number of troublemakers. I will also consult with the authorities to ensure that public order is guaranteed. Do you fear things will get out of hand? Of course, it's not with a light heart that we face them.
Sarkozy has ordered key ministers to form a crisis cabinet with the role of ensuring the continuity of fuel supplies. And there were more public and private sector strikes. On Tuesday, around a quarter of France's 12,500 service stations had run out of petrol and diesel. Those that do have fuel are running out fast. Ports and refineries remain on strike, and fuel depots have been hit by picket actions, and go slows by commercial drivers have clogged up major roads. Half of domestic flights were cancelled, and about a third of international services. Again, only about 50% of national train services were operating. The chaos has become Sarkozy's biggest challenge since he was elected in 2007. In spite of 71% support for the strikes, he's held firm on his plan to raise the minimum retirement age from 60 to 62, with full pensions payable at 67 instead of 65.
The biggest oversight would be if I did not do my job and did not ensure the financing of retirement pensions for today and tomorrow.
Sarkozy's critics accuse him of arrogance and of having a divisive nature.
I think the solution is in the government. The best is to discuss. That's what we want.
Is the country divided?
The country has always been divided, even since Sarkozy. When Sarkozy came to power, he created the tax shield for the rich. So it's not the only reform that the people are against.
So, with neither side, it seems, prepared to give way, the protests, strikes and disruptions continue, and the very social fabric of France is being stretched to the limit. Marc Vautier, Press TV, Paris.
The United Nations has warned against what it calls a dangerous trend of intolerance targeting Muslim immigrants in Europe. The World Body Secretary General Ban Ki-moon says that some governments accuse Muslim immigrants of violating European values. Ban Ki-moon has added that in reality, many times it's those actually doing the accusing who are guilty of subverting these values. He has underlined that Europe cannot afford stereotyping, which closes minds and breeds hatred. He has called upon the European Union to demonstrate leadership, not just with regard to immigration, but also in tackling extreme poverty. The Secretary General made this statement in a speech to the European Parliament in Strasbourg.
And the UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has urged Lebanon to comply with UN Security Council Resolution 1559, which was adopted in 2004. Sarah Nishim reports from Beirut.
Hezbollah has described UN Security Council Resolution 1559 as biased and politicized. This stance came in response to the 12th semi-annual report by United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon regarding the implementation of this resolution. In this report, the UN Special Envoy for the Implementation of the Resolution, Terry Rhode Larson, expresses concern over what he calls Hezbollah's military buildup. The report also points to the presence of Lebanese and non-Lebanese militias outside the control of the state.
As usual, we consider this international resolution is not fair. It is biased and politicized. And I think we have to ask them about the international resolutions about the Palestinian cause. Why they are concerning and focusing about the Lebanese resistance, and they didn't care at all about the Israelis' violations, the Lebanese sovereignty.
Co-authored by France and the United States, Resolution 1559 was adopted on September 2, 2004. Among other demands, the resolution called on the Lebanese and non-Lebanese militia to disband and declared support for a free and fair electoral process. But Hezbollah and others call it a means to limit its growing popularity and strength.
Hezbollah today now is not considered as a militia,